Hello, this is Dustin Tomacara with the Decatur Herald and Review for the date of Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined Frozen in Time: LAS Students See What Titanic Disaster Was Like by Valerie Wells. Hanging by your hands from a tilted bar is even harder than it looks. I think it was harder because my hands are cold, said Vinaya Minor, a seventh grader at Lutheran School Association, who lasted all of 9 seconds. The tilted bar and other interactive displays were part of the 10th annual unit on the Titanic disaster and the high school literature class taught by Jennifer Thomas. The tradition was started by Principal Allison Nolan when she taught the class. Students choose one aspect of life in the era or the sinking and do an interactive project, which they present to younger students in small groups. Students studied original accounts from the days immediately following the disaster, so they had a primary source. They get to pick their own topic and create whatever they want to do, but it has to be something interactive, Thomas said. They get so into this. I don't know if it's the tragedy, but it just makes it so sad. I could barely even talk because they were shouting out things. Before trying to hang from that bar, students stopped at Alex Harshman's display on hypothermia and tested their mettle by seeing how long they could stand to keep their hands submerged in ice water. The idea was to recreate the conditions of passengers in a small way, who would have been cold, drifting in frigid waters. I love hypothermia, said Alex, a sophomore. It's a very easy topic for me to talk about. I love the activity to see who can keep their hands in the water longest because it's almost a competition and I'm a competitive person. Hypothermia is not just a danger in water, he added. It can happen if your car breaks down in winter and you try to go for help, so it's a topic people should understand. Lily Martinek and Morgan Lane chose to highlight food on the Titanic, which had two complete working kitchens and carried 75,000 pounds of meat, 25,000 pounds of poultry, 11,000 pounds of fish, 80,000 pounds of potatoes, 1,000 loaves of bread, and 10,000 pounds of sugar for the voyage across the Atlantic Ocean. And unlike most other seagoing vessels of its time, the Titanic offered meals to the third-class passengers in steerage. Those meals were not nearly as elaborate as the ones offered to first and second-class passengers, but filling, with a typical evening meal consisting of rice soup, roast beef, and boiled potatoes. First class ate filet of brill and chicken a la Maryland. To give it that air of authenticity, the two girls prepared food and served their guests, even including wine, which was actually sparkling grape juice, to complete the experience. We have big ideas, Lily said with a laugh. The RMS Titanic sank overnight, April 14th to 15th, 1912, after striking an iceberg in the North Atlantic, 4 days into her maiden voyage from Southampton, England, to New York City. Of the 2,240 people aboard, 1,500 died in the icy waters. The incident has inspired countless books, movies, attempts to salvage the wreckage, and lore that includes the story that Captain Edward John Smith boasted before the ship sailed that even God couldn't sink the Titanic. The unsinkable ship had one flaw in its design, however. The 15 watertight compartments that were supposed to prevent the entire bulkhead from flooding in the event of a leak were separated by walls that extended only a few feet above the waterline. Another safety lapse was the lack of adequate numbers of lifeboats. Titanic carried 16 lifeboats plus 4 collapsible lifeboats, which could only accommodate 1,178 people. In addition, most of the boats were launched half full. The number of lifeboats on Titanic actually exceeded safety requirements of the time. Brittany Reed, a junior, and Myra Billingsley, a sophomore, chose the lifeboats as their project. They put tape on the floor of the school's multipurpose room, the same size and shape as a Titanic lifeboat, and students sat in chairs with oars to imagine trying to paddle to safety in the icy water. This is putting them in the people's shoes, or seats, if you will, Myra said. We want them to feel the fear they felt. There's not really a way to replicate that because their lives aren't on the line, but sitting there holding an oar, it's just kind of cool to give them that perspective. Again, this story was by Valerie Wells, who can be contacted at 217-421-7982. Thanks for listening. Okay, the next story is Sarah Gordo's Attention on Arts, local theater program dealing with tough reality. Sarah Gordo High School's theater program found room for itself on a world stage. Instructor Vicky Gilpin, part of the school's daring and progressive program, applied to the American High School Theater Festival, part of the Festival Fringe in Edinburgh, Scotland. That festival is the world's largest arts fest. Being accepted is a big deal. For openers, the application involved a pair of complex mailings. It was Gilpin's job to show Sarah Gordo's theater was doing things differently than others. She pointed to the new performance space that will be part of the school's renovation, as well as shows put on in non-traditional spots, such as the group's series of plays presented in the school library. Another package featured letters from community leaders on the benefits of what's going on with Sarah Gordo's theater program. Presenting a play at the festival would require adapting quickly and cleverly to whatever space they were provided. We were able, with those library shows, to prove that we could do a lot with minimal production cost, Gilpin said. That's what made the difference. Summer is a time for trips and camps. High school age athletes, musicians, and writers are headed to camps this summer. Others will be making trips with friends and or family. But there's a financial reality with all of it. I warned the kids, Gilpin said, we were going to try it, but it would take some very generous people. That's why the festival performance trip to Scotland by theater students at Sarah Gordo High School is not happening. All intentions to the contrary. We had to raise $3,000, Gilpin said. That seemed pretty reasonable, even if the school was going to send just a couple of students to the festival, but that was essentially a down payment. Just a down payment. That $3,000 is plenty of money, but on top of that was another $6,500 per student, Gilpin said. 10 students wanted to go. Of course it would be life-changing, Gilpin said. Any teenager's trip overseas is life-changing. That said, I have 2 students who would gnaw off their right arms for the chance to go. Anyone who's tried to raise $100 for a charitable 5K can imagine the improbability of raising $70,000 in a short time. Many schools are additionally handcuffed with specific fundraising windows for different groups. And in a couple of days before a deposit was due, Gilpin was disappointed for her students, but optimistic about the ideas springing from a group of parents who united in a fundraising effort. One of the important things to remember about fundraisers is there are real people being affected by decisions to spend money or not. Of course, decide each fundraising request as it comes through on its own merit. There are thousands of parents and students who live through this daily. You may not need pizza or popcorn or candy bars, but buying some might help change someone's life. Remember the real people affected by those decisions. That story was written by Tim Kaine, who can be contacted at 217-421-6908. This story is entitled Police: Suspected Thief Caught by Tony Reed. A Decatur man who used sob stories to trick his way into drivers' cars and steal from them has been arrested, according to the police. The 51-year-old man was taken into custody after an incident at the drive-through lane at a restaurant March 21st and was then arrested again while in the Macon County Jail on Friday after detectives linked him to a similar crime outside a grocery store. In each case, the man was booked on a preliminary charge of committing theft while having a previous larceny conviction, which are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Macon County jail records show the man remained in custody Tuesday in lieu of $25,000 bail. In a sworn affidavit, Decatur Police Detective Barry Hitchens said in the first incident at 9:15 p.m. March 21st, a 16-year-old driver was approached by the man as he waited in the drive-thru lane of Dairy Queen at 230 West 1st Drive. The man claimed he needed a jump start for his vehicle, and when the driver offered to follow him to his car, the man opened the door and got in. The jump start story was false, and a separate affidavit said the man had the teenage driver, take him to an address on Cleveland Avenue. He then stole more than $10 in change before telling the driver, "You're lucky I'm not one of those people that would stab you or jab you," the affidavit said. He then had the driver drop him off at another location in town before fleeing. The driver described the man as crazy and said he feared he would be harmed if he didn't do what he said. Hitchens said police had noted the similarity between this incident and one that happened about 6:50 p.m. April 22nd, when a driver was flagged down by a man as he was leaving in the parking lot of Kroger, 255 West 1st Drive. And that April 22nd, since today is April 17th, might actually mean March 22nd, but I'm not certain. This time, the man pretended like he knew the driver and then asked for a ride to a gas station so he could buy a new car battery. Hitchens said the man climbed into the vehicle and grabbed the wheel, forcing the driver to head north across Lake Decatur. He stole $25 in change, and after the driver pulled into Mueller Park, demanded the driver give him his minivan, Hitchens said. This next story is entitled A Warm Welcoming. Three visitor centers will open in Logan County by Kevin Barlow. Visitors and tourists in Logan County soon will have additional help in finding historical sites and tourist attractions in Mount Pulaski, Atlanta, and Elkhart. Visitor welcome centers will be placed in each community to motivate tourists to visit sites, attractions, and businesses throughout Logan County and to spend money in the process, said Bill Thomas, executive director of the Logan County Economic Development Partnership. The LCEDP is partnering with the Logan County Tourism Bureau and the three communities on the project. Each of these three communities has a deep history, and there are some really fascinating stories that our visitors would be interested in, Thomas said. Tom Martin, chairman of the Mount Pulaski Economic Development and Planning Board, said the goal is to encourage people to visit not only Mount Pulaski, but also the rest of Logan County. We have some restaurants and shops and great festivals, and we want visitors to Logan County to experience some of those things, Martin said. But we also want to encourage them to spend some time here and visit everything this county has to offer. Mount Pulaski is the home of one of two original courthouses where Abraham Lincoln practiced law in the 8th Judicial Circuit from 1849 to 1854. The courthouse draws visitors from across the country to walk on the original courthouse floor that Lincoln once walked on. Coordinated signage will be installed at each site, and each community will staff its welcome center. When they are not open, monitors will show videos of Logan County attractions and sites, and weatherproof outdoor racks will offer brochures. The hope is to have the centers staffed before the travel season begins. Our goal is to have someone there within the next 30 days, Martin said. The welcome centers will be in the Country Bumpkin Shop on Governor Oglesby Street in Elkhart, on the square in the Mount Pulaski Township Historical Society's Museum Building and in Atlanta's Union Hall Building, owned by the Atlanta Public Library, on historic Route 66. There are so many tourist attractions in Logan County because we have Route 66, all of the Abraham Lincoln history, and then there are some great festivals, a great tradition of high school sports, and several things that are unique to our area, Thomas said. The total cost is estimated to be $7,500, with each community contributing $1,000 and the Tourism Bureau funding the balance. The sites were chosen because they represent the main entry points into Logan County for tourists traveling Route 66, Interstate 55, and State Routes 121 and 54. a place to welcome visitors to Logan County already exists in Lincoln at the site of the Tourism Bureau office at the Amtrak station. That story again by Kevin Barlow, who can be reached at 309-820-3238. The next story is entitled Discussion Covers Justice, Violence by Annalisa Chomifemuk. Community advocate Michelle Hope Walker said she hoped the wide-ranging discussion she organized Tuesday could highlight issues of violence, criminal justice reform, women's issues, and others. The event, which lasted more than 2 hours, with a break between topics, was held at the Decatur Public Library. Walker said she has spearheaded the event for over 10 years and created it as a forum for residents to share their concerns. It is so important we talk and brainstorm how to fix these issues because they will never go away, Walker said. During the event, MacArthur High School senior Zanai Rice performed a religious song to promote peace. Adults are trying to improve the streets, but sometimes they get stuck in the past and it doesn't help the future, Rice said. I think what this group is doing here is a good starting point to fix things. Walker specifically referred to Marcel Whitfield, a 32-year-old man who was fatally shot in the parking lot of a Decatur bar last week. Whitfield was sitting in his car in the parking lot of Feeling Lucky, 3775 North Woodward Street, around 1:39 a.m. April 7th, when he was shot twice, Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said. Police said he was initially expected to survive after suffering bullet wounds to the chest and thigh. Whitfield went into full arrest and died at 7:45 p.m. the same day after having undergone surgery and lengthy resuscitation efforts, said Macon County Coroner Michael E. Day. No arrests had been made as of Tuesday morning, police said. What happened to Marcel was tragic, Walker said. It's scary that this could happen to anybody. Whitfield's death was the fourth Decatur homicide of 2019. Earlier this year, police arrested 22-year-old Bilejo L. Soyster, or Billy Joe L. Soyster, on New Year's Day in the fatal stabbing of her boyfriend, 38-year-old David W. Murray. Jaquaris L. West, 18, and Matthew A. Anderson, Jr., 20, have each pleaded not guilty to 4 counts of first-degree murder and the fatal shooting of Curtis T. Hairston, who died after being shot inside Long John Silver's, 701 West Eldorado Street. On February 11th, 2-year-old Tanaja Barnes died from what police described as neglect in a filthy home. Barnes' mother, Chwanka Davis, 21, and her boyfriend, 25-year-old Anthony Myers, have both been charged with murder. It's not just about criminal justice reform or stopping violence, Walker said. We need to come together as a community to work on all of the issues that contribute to the bigger picture. The article's author, Annalisa Chomifemuk, can be contacted at 217-421-7985. This next story is entitled Pana Man Found Dead, Agency Says, by J. Lynn Cook. A Pana man initially reported as missing was found dead near Pana Lake, according to the Missing Person Awareness Network, an Illinois Crime Stoppers-affiliated nonprofit that works to locate missing people. Gia Wright, president and founder of the organization, said an alert was put out for Michael R. Eagle after the nonprofit was contacted about his disappearance. The network said Eagle had last been seen leaving a neighbor's house on April 4th. Wright said her organization worked with area law enforcement to search for Eagle, and on Tuesday, his body was found at the lake. When contacted for further information, the Shelby County Sheriff's Office referred all questions to Illinois State Police. State Police could not immediately comment Tuesday night on reports of Eagle's death. Shelby County Coroner Brian Green on Tuesday said his office is investigating a death in the county, but would not confirm if it involved Eagle or provide further information. The next article is titled Watch for Signs of the Suicidal from the Herald and Review editorial board. Anyone who says suicide is a long-term solution to a short-term problem has never slipped into that blackest hole of hell or has never listened, really listened, to someone who found their way out. Recent deaths of people connected to mass shootings, two students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and the father of a Newtown victim, have again brought suicide to the front page. Indeed, the topic has become so frequent that we are repeating much of an editorial we published last June after the high-profile deaths of chef Anthony Bourdain and designer Kate Spade. Experts in psychiatry and counseling continue to share warning signs. Social service workers again beg people to use hotlines for themselves or to seek help for those in distress. The most recent suicides were attributed likely to post-traumatic stress disorder brought on by the mass shootings, yet the reaction from friends and family was all too common. The person seemed down, but not enough to want to die. Like people who cover up their alcoholism, drug abuse, or habitual theft, those considering suicide may keep those thoughts completely to themselves to avoid the stigma of needing help. For others, the demons of mental illness have been all too obvious for far too long. Either way, left behind are caring friends and loving family members who forever will question what more they could have done. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A 2018 story by Lee News Service says rates have been climbing for years. There were 44,965 suicide deaths in 2016, with a 30% increase from 1999 to 2016. If someone you know is having difficulty with day-to-day living, listen to them and watch for signs. Have they lost interest in their favorite activities? Have there been major changes in their eating and sleeping habits? Is it hard for them to concentrate or make decisions? Do they talk about feeling worthless or hopeless? Offer to listen and don't judge their answers. If you're not sure what to do, talk to their doctor or call 211 for guidance. If you're the one in pain, talk to a trusted friend, family member, teacher, or coworker. There are people who want to help, and medicine and counseling can ease your pain. Call 211 for the Crisis and Social Services Referral Hotline operated by PATH, P-A-T-H. Help also is available through the Center for Human Services at area code 309-827-5351 and the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Again, numbers for the Center for Human Services is area code 309-827-5351, and the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is at 1-800-273-8255. Thank you. This next article is called Police: Man Knocked Out Couple at Bar. Suspect Arrested for Aggravated Battery, by Tony Reed. A Decatur man was arrested Friday on two preliminary counts of aggravated battery involving great bodily harm for knocking out a man and also knocking out a woman who suffered a broken jaw, according to police. The 26-year-old man is free after posting $30,000 bond with the condition he stays away from the two victims. He has not yet been arraigned or had the chance to enter a plea. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. A sworn Decatur police affidavit from Detective Brad Hall said the 35-year-old woman had been arguing with her boyfriend, 49, in the parking lot of Feeling Lucky Lounge and Package at 3775 North Woodford Street around 1:45 a.m. March 24th. Bouncers from the bar had tried to stop the argument and get the couple to leave, the affidavit said. While this was going on, the girlfriend told police her boyfriend had been approached by a man, later identified as the suspect, who punched her boyfriend twice, knocking him out cold on the ground. She said as soon as this man struck her boyfriend, she tried to intervene, and the same man struck her in the face, Hall said. She advised she was also knocked unconscious, and she fell to the ground, and she lay there for several minutes before she regained consciousness. Hall described the boyfriend as being left with a black eye and facial swelling, while his girlfriend's shattered jaw required surgeons to insert a plate, fit it back together. She advised that she has other broken bones in her face that doctors are currently monitoring to see if they will heal without doing another surgery at this time, Hall said. The affidavit said the couple had at first thought they had been attacked by a feeling lucky bouncer, but the police report makes it clear that the suspect was not part of the bar's security staff. Troy Chastain, the son of the couple who owned Feeling Lucky, also confirmed in an interview Tuesday that the suspect was not employed by the bar. Chastain described the man as being involved in a fight with the boyfriend, but said he doesn't know how that began. Chastain said his security staff had broken up the fight between the boyfriend and girlfriend before the altercation with the suspect that was described in the police affidavit. The writer of this article, Tony Reed, may be contacted at 217-421-7977. This article, titled Cooper Chosen as CEO, he formerly led HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. This story comes from Dean Olson at the State Journal Register out of Springfield. The man who recently led HSHS St. Mary's Hospital on an interim basis has now been named president and chief executive officer of HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. E.J. Kuiper, president and CEO of the Central Illinois Division of Hospital Sisters Health System, had held the St. John's position on an interim basis since the October 31st resignation of Dr. Charles Lucour. Kuiper, 51, will continue in his role as Central Illinois Division CEO, doing both jobs simultaneously from this point on, St. John's spokeswoman Erica Johnson said. He had also served as interim president and CEO of St. Mary's from July to April 1st, when Michael Hicks began in the Decatur position. I am honored to continue in this leadership role at HSHS St. John's Hospital, Kuiper said Tuesday in a news release. I hope to continue building relationships with our colleagues and medical staff in the Springfield community that will allow us to enhance all aspects of healthcare for our patients. Cooper's new job as both St. John's CEO and divisional CEO takes effect immediately, Johnson said. Cooper has been an HSHS divisional CEO since 2013. This is the first time the Central Illinois division leader will also be the permanent CEO of St. John's, the flagship institution of Hospital Sisters Health System that has 415 beds and 2,800 workers. In addition to St. John's and St. Mary's, the division also includes HSHS St. Francis Hospital in Litchfield and HSHS Good Shepherd Hospital in Shelbyville. The decision by the boards of HSHS and St. John's to select Cooper after a nationwide search wasn't done to save costs on executive salaries, Johnson said. She wouldn't disclose Cooper's salary. Cooper, a naturalized U.S. citizen who was born and raised in the Netherlands, joined not-for-profit HSHS after various executive roles at For-Profit Hospital Corporation of America in Southwest Florida. He later was president and CEO of OSF Healthcare St. Anthony Health Center in Alton. Cooper, who with his wife Patty have three grown children, received his bachelor's degree in physical therapy in the Netherlands. He went on to earn a master's in healthcare administration from Florida Gulf Coast University and a clinical doctorate degree in physical therapy from the University of St. Augustine. Lucour, the first physician CEO of St. John's, left after 4.5 years as the hospital's leader to head a Catholic institution near New York City, St. Francis Hospital in Roslyn, New York. Lucour said last year that the decision to leave was in the best interest of my family and also a positive step professionally. The cardiologist and native of Cheshire, Connecticut, said last year that he and his wife raised three children in Springfield and lived here almost 30 years. He said the couple looked forward to being closer to family members in the Northeast. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for April 17th, 2019. Please stay tuned.